Hello and welcome to the Saints FC podcast. It is the long-awaited sequel from episode 117, recorded in May 2023, and we're now back in just sneaking into the final hours of January 2024. And as ever, I have the marvellous, the charming, and the incredibly dashing Tom Parker on the line. Tom, how's it going?
I'm good, John. It's really good to catch up, isn't it? It's sort of snuck in end of the transfer window, a podcast.
Had to be done, I think. I mean,
Fabrizio Romano didn't get the heads up on this one.
No. He's going to be absolutely kicking himself tomorrow, isn't he?
He's going to be fuming about that.
Yeah, in the know. Yeah, right. So I was just like looking, what did we talk about in episodes 117 was, I think it was sort of like picking over the bones of a disaster season. And I can see my notes from that episode. And like my first note is list of Sports Republic mistakes. Number one, bought the wrong club. And it doesn't really get much better from there. And I don't know, like, you know, I thought about, should we record a podcast at the start of the season? Things were going so badly and I was just feeling thoroughly depressed about everything. I was wondering if we were going to do like a double drop down of the leagues, you know, when we're in the middle of that run, Tom. And now I'm in this sort of like weird situation where I'm enjoying being a Saints fan again. And I was like, damn, in my house in Dartmoor and Devon, there's no one to talk to Saints about. So that's why we're here. We've got to somehow reflect on everything that's gone right and just enjoy chatting Saints for a little while. That sound all right?
Yeah, it does. It does feel weird though, doesn't it? Because it feels artificial. It feels like we're not allowed, like we're in a sort of dream, like a stasis. But then it's going to be taken away from us. Maybe it will. I don't know, but enjoy it while we can.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, I think it's quite funny. I was having like a couple of Saints fans groups on Facebook and follow quite a few Saints supporters on Twitter. And even though that we're on, checks notes, 22 games undefeated run at the moment, almost after every game, there's someone moaning about something. It's been so bad being a Saints fan for so long that it's almost now, it's rewritten our DNA. We just can't handle a 22 match unbeaten run. We've got to find something to whinge about.
Yes.
What would be your top things to whinge about, do you think, Tom?
Top things to whinge about? I don't have anything, really. I think it's... My thing that I will moan about is if we keep doing really well, we'll end up in the Premier League and I almost don't want it. I'm very happy staying in the Championship and bossing the league. But of course, it's a false narrative because, as you and I were discussing this morning very early, if we don't go up, you know, you're not going to see this team next season. You're going to see, I'd say, probably seven of that starting 11 go. So we have to go up, don't we, really?
Yeah, I think the sort of like that's the rules of the game when it comes to the finances, right? You know, the parachute payments will go the season, you know, the next season after. So they have to start planning for the future. They have to start offloading big ticket players. I mean, the likes of Kyle Walker-Peters, I don't think would remain with us. Stuart Armstrong, would he hang around for another season? The Prem, Adam Armstrong.
He's in the
Championship.
Yeah. He's out of contract, Stuart Armstrong, isn't he, at the end of the season?
Yeah.
I mean, I think if you look at it, I think you'd probably say Bazzuni's probably had a bit of a redemption season, isn't he? I think, yeah, he might have done enough to tempt someone. Walker Peters, Bednarek's definitely not a Championship player. Harwood Bell is definitely not. You know, that's probably four of your back five. Zonked out before nowhere. That's before all the loan players,
yeah,
you know, head back. So it's kind of all or nothing, isn't it?
Yeah. High stakes indeed. Should we do like a super quick reflection on the season? Because I see the season as sort of like three parts. We had the start, which was mixed but fun, other than the League Cup result. And sort of August went okay, I suppose. You know, we beat QPR, we beat Plymouth, we beat Sheffield Wednesday, we had a thrilling 4-4 draw with Norwich. That's like part one. The embarrassing exits, yep, Gillingham as well, including that.
The prequel.
Yeah. Then you had the five straight losses, where I think...
That's including a cup game, though. It's like that. You're including that League Cup there.
No, it's five straight in the league, because we lost 5-0 to Sunderland.
Was it 5 in the league?
Yeah, 5-0 to Sunderland, 4-1 to Leicester, 1-0 to Ipswich. No, you're right, right. Yeah, yeah.
It was four.
It's four. I added a loss somewhere from somewhere.
You could probably include the League Cup if we're being like that.
Yeah.
So I think that was in that run, wasn't it? But like, yeah, I think that was the kind of Russell Martin out moment, wasn't it? That was the nadir of the season. Those games, because we got really pumped, didn't we? Like really, like that Leicester game was bad.
Yeah.
Like three above us, and the Sunderland. Oh Jesus Christ! They all went to that game. If ever there's a game for the club to refund fans, it's definitely that one.
Yeah, yeah. Was that the Mason Holgate masterclass?
The guy. I mean, maybe we should talk about Mason Holgate, because as you, what did you say about him, John?
he's the Maitland-Niles of this season, isn't he?
Yeah. I think that's a bit unfair on Maitland-Niles, to be honest. He is. What a player Mason Holgate is. Like, how is he stealing a living?
It's sort of like one of those...
He did it. Didn't he?
One of those players, isn't it, that you sort of like, you just reflect and just think, how did this guy manage to get through like years and years of like Premier League scouting, get offered a professional contract? I just don't get it. Anyway, I mean, look, we don't need to... We probably don't really need to dwell on the rubbish bits, because basically from the 30th of September onwards, it's been glory days, hasn't it? You know, a 3-1 victory over Leeds.
Amazing.
Beating Stoke away from home. You know, home draw to Rotherham, maybe not so great. Beating Hull, and on and on and on and on it goes, with not a single loss all the way through to, you know, we nearly did it at the weekend, didn't we, with Watford. But when we brought on our 18 players, it just felt inevitable, really, that we were going to get the equaliser. It was just completely different team, wasn't it? You know, the first 60 minutes versus the last half an hour was just insane.
Yeah. Well, I think this is what Saints have got, isn't it? Saints have got players that are Premier League quality. Now, they might not be... Last season, they might not have been all collectively good enough, but there is, I think, one of the fascinating things we've seen this season as you watch the games, is the difference in quality between the Championship and the Premier League is so great, particularly defenders and midfield, defenders and forwards. So forwards miss chances in the Premier League, you know they would score. And defenders do kind of insane things that they, you know, that like they would never see them do in the Premier League. And I think what Saints have got is that ability to bring in these players. And I think one of the amazing things this season has been our squad, isn't it? And the amount of goals scored by substitutes, and just the ability to keep ratcheting up the pressure and keep the ball and keep doing the same thing over and over again, knowing that it will get a result. And I agree with you on Saturday, you know, when those players came on, you know, Armstrongs, they just looked a different level, way beyond anything that Watford had out there.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. I mean, it's really interesting, isn't it? Because I think Stuart Armstrong felt like a Premier League player. He has done for years.
Yeah.
And, you know, he's getting on a bit, I suppose, in terms of his footballing age. But that's just nothing for him in the Championship, is it? I mean, he looks great every time he comes on the pitch. Adam Armstrong, he's in that weird bit, and I think that we've got quite a few players that fit into this category where they're probably not good enough for sort of like a consistently mid-table, maybe occasionally pushing for Europa League places, Premier League side, but then they're much better than the Championship. I mean, Adam Armstrong is perfect example of that. You know, he gets chances that he puts away in the Championship. And then I think in the Premier League, with slightly quicker defenders, slightly sharper goalkeepers, they don't go away. And so, I mean, it's going to be really interesting. If we do get promoted, presumably he'll stay. And it'll be really interesting to see, can he keep that momentum going up? Or is that actually, is his ceiling just somewhere in, I don't know, the purgatory that sits between the Championship and the Premier League?
Well, hasn't he got something like second most goal contributions in Europe behind Harry Kane? In something insane in terms of assists and goals. But yeah, I think you're right. We've got a lot of these players. And it's even like Stuart Armstrong. Stuart Armstrong has always been a brilliant, talented footballer. Real elegant footballer that can do the special. You remember like Tadic used to be able to do that little something special that can win you a game? But I think almost like he, in the Championship, because again, the defenders aren't as good, the midfielders that he's playing are just nowhere near as good. So he's got that little bit extra time, so he looks almost like even better. And it's amazing. I think if you look back at our goals this season, the amount of them that come from either a Stuart Armstrong assist or something Stuart Armstrong does very sneakily and cleverly to manufacture space for someone else, it's just week in, week out. I mean, didn't he get three assists against Swansea, I think, in the end? So, I mean, he's a bit of a machine at the moment.
Yeah, he really is. I guess we could talk about that game against Watford. His goal was just, it was so lovely. It was sort of like the way he took the ball, shaped his body, the Watford goalkeeper and about six Watford players all go to one side of the goal. And he was just like, oh, fine, I'll put it in the near post then. And it was just brilliant. It just looked so marvellous. And he looked a cut above everyone else on the pitch in that moment.
Yeah, he's a Rolls-Royce footballer, isn't he, at this level? But the thing, the Saints have got, I think you could probably argue, like four or five of these guys. I mean, like, look at Walker Peters this season. The guy's an animal at this level.
Yeah, I mean, I thought he was excellent in the Premier League as well, to be fair.
Yeah.
KWP, I don't really remember him putting in a bad performance ever in a Saints shirt. Who else we got? So, I mean, Gavin Bazunu, he deserves the plaudits now, doesn't he? He looks so much better. He still has the odd mistake. But
yes,
he is a much better football player than he was last season. He seems more assured on the ball. He seems more confident. He seems to be stopping more shots. Again, though, will that carry through to the Premier League if we get promoted?
Yeah, there was a horrible time, wasn't there, in the Premier League where it was like almost every shot on target seemed to go in with Bazunu. And he's made a few mistakes this year, but I do think that's the style of football we play is high risk, high reward, isn't it? It's, you know, we pass that ball around. I think Benderek has had more touches than any other Saints player this season. And, you know, we pass that ball constantly. So he's going to occasionally, you know, like against Plymouth, where you get that momentary lapse. But I think the difference between Saints now and probably the Saints of 3 months, or, you know, three months ago, is that we're now getting that second goal, we're getting that third goal, and sometimes the fourth and the fifth goals. And I think, you know, we're through that real run of like, we learned like we could score one goal, but we also didn't look like we could keep a clean sheet. And now I think Bazunu looks much more assured. He looks much more confident. I almost think that Preston North End corner, which even though it was an own goal, it's kind of been like the making of him.
Yeah.
Like a weird freak thing that happened to him. But he seems to be completely revitalised after that.
I really enjoyed that moment. And I was a bit gutted it wasn't an own goal, but it's just great, wasn't it? I mean, that sort of looked like the run was coming to an end there. Obviously, it wasn't anything as spectacular as it is now. But, I mean, it's sort of, it's the good vibes Saints team, isn't it? You know, the amount of good vibes we've got. I mean, when you sort of roll back the years, you know, imagine if you can, go back to when we got promoted from the Championship last time. Ricky Lambert, Morgan Schneiderlin, Adam Lallana,
Pompey.
Yeah. What do you think? There's any players that we've got now playing in this team that we're going to be looking at in the future? Going well, it was always obvious he was going to have an England career or a international career or get a move to a big club. Who in our squad now do you think is sort of at that level that those guys were then?
I think Walker Peters' career trajectory is a funny one. He's now like, what, 25, 26? And I just don't get it. Like, the guy can play equally well on both flanks. He is a brilliant attacker. He's a really solid defender. He scores goals. He makes goals. He goes past people. And he's still at Saints. And I'm just amazed that someone like, you know, an Arsenal hasn't snapped him up. An English player, probably not cost that much money, that can play on both sides of the defence. I love Walker Peters. I think he's great. But I think Harwood Bellis looks like a different level. He looks like a proper, solid centre-back, but also the guy can really pass, can't he? He can really unlock things. Harwood Bellis looks like he could be the big one.
Yeah, I really like Harwood Bellis, and I think that's a good call. I think Carl Walker-Peters and Harwood Bellis. I mean, Carl Walker-Peters did get a couple of England caps, didn't he?
He didn't look out of place.
No, he looked really good. Maybe it'll take a different England manager, or maybe it'll take a good run for Saints in the Premier League, or you know, possibly a transfer to any other team other than Southampton. but yeah, I think Harwood Bellis, he plays with a sort of maturity and a style and a comfort on the ball that almost you would associate with players that have come through La Masia Academy, Barcelona's academy.
Yeah.
You know, he's as assured as Oriol Romeo, who's our La Masia baseline in Saints, isn't he?
Yeah. No, I agree. I think as well, but I'd also say Bednarek. I mean, I think they all look so, this is the funny thing, they all look so much better at this level. Like, even like Bednarek looked immense this season. And to be fair, a guy got a lot of stick when he went to Villa.
Yeah.
And, you know, but again, like...
Good old Yanni B. He's back.
Yanni B. You know, never in doubt. But, like, you got to look at what was Sport Republic kind of doing. Like, you know, they sanctioned some mad, mad transfers. They sanctioned Jack Stephens going to Bournemouth when we couldn't defend for Toffee. I mean, they go and sanction him going to a relegation line, but they sanction a Polish international centre-back with 40-50 caps going to Aston Villa. They let Romeo go. You know, like, they did some mad things. And I think, you know, fair play to Bednarek. He's come back.
Yeah.
Probably going to got to move away, and he's pulling up trees in the Championship.
Yeah. It's a tough gig, isn't it, for Jack Stephens? I think he felt like, you know, he came back to Saints, you're going to be made club captain. He was probably thinking, this is going to be my year. And, We see what happens when he gets brought onto the pitch in place of one of Jan Bednarek and Harwood Bellis, and we're just not as good. And I don't necessarily think that's Jack Stephens' fault, but I think Harwood Bellis and Bednarek have now created a really solid understanding of each other. They understand each other's games. They know where they're going to be positioned. Like, Bednarek is supremely confident in Harwood Bellis. Harwood Bellis is confident in Bednarek. They're happy to pass it around quite tight situations when we're being pressed as well. And I think when we bring on Stephens into the pitch, that sort of falls apart a bit. And I actually think if we're going to keep this run, undefeated run, going for a long time, and, you know, maybe that'll be in the league, because at some point we're going to have an FA Cup loss, probably. I think that foundation of those two in the centre of defence is probably that's the thing that's the most improved part of our team, you know, over the course of the last 22 games that we've won. A lot of that has come from those guys being solid.
I completely agree. Completely agree. And I think as well, Stephens, I mean, you and I for many years have waited for the Romeoification of Stephens, this transformation from a centre-back to a ball-playing defensive midfielder. That is probably, we have to maybe admit, never going to happen. But I felt sorry for him, because at the same time, Downs were injured, which is when Old was ill because he couldn't eat raw chicken. apparently. You know, that was when Stevens was also injured.
Yeah.
So I agree with you. But Stevens has got a difficult job here because I don't think anyone can say we look better with him on the pitch. And also, we're clearly not going to play five at the back very often. So it does kind of leave him in a... But then it's a winning team. You don't change a winning team.
Yeah, exactly. I suppose if we move up the pitch, I don't think we need to dwell on the left-back position. It's sort of functional, but not particularly exciting.
It's a funny one, isn't it, Manning?
Yeah.
Like, Manning is a real... But like, I don't want to dwell on it, but like, is he any good? Like, we look good with him, but like he can't defend. The Manning, I think there's on Twitter, the Manning gap, you know, which is that vast chasm that's often left between Ryan Manning and the attacking right winger or the attacking forward is pretty vast. I mean, we kind of get away with it, but Manning is a weird one. Yeah. I mean, he's apparently very good at corners, but I've been thinking about our corners. I want to talk to you about corners, John.
Okay. Save that one for any other business, I think.
Yeah, yeah.
Well, you know, I suppose, like, if we think about midfielders, Flynn Downes, what a signing.
It's an animal at this level, isn't he? You can see why Russell Martin wanted him. Like, he is a machine.
He's perfect, isn't he? I mean, he's sort of fit into that
so good.
James Ward-Prowse, Oriol Romeo, just all-action midfielder, really, isn't he?
He's got such a good engine. And also, I love the way that he's so dedicated to being to that role.
Yeah.
You know, like, he doesn't try and do, like, crazy stuff. He's like, if there's a corner, I'm staying back because... So, I can't really shoot, but like, you know what I mean? But I couldn't break up anything.
He's like the grown up in the team, isn't he?
Yeah. And I think also he's strong. He's sensible. He's obviously a real leader. Yeah. And I think the difference in this season and a thousand difference between this season and last season is there's no one raising the level. There was last season, no one raising the level in the team. Even the top players like Ward-Prowse weren't really doing it. And I think this year, you know, players like Downs, they are pushing the players around them to be better and to be more committed. And yeah. Downs has been a hell of a signing.
Yeah. Smallbone, I think he's sort of, you can almost put him in the Ryan Manning sort of category.
Yeah.
Maybe a bit better.
Funny one, isn't he? Because
I mean, he pops up with the occasional quite tidy finish, which is useful.
Yeah. He scores important goals.
Yeah.
He's got like four or five from midfield.
His positioning is good on the pitch.
He does look.
It?
His position is good. I just think he looks a bit lightweight. And also, I always think he slows things down.
Yeah.
But he's looked quite good in the last few weeks since we signed Rothwell.
Yeah.
And all of a sudden, he's sort of like perked up a little bit.
I haven't been fabulously impressed. Is that one of those Rothwell players?
He was terrible, wasn't he, on Saturday?
Hmm.
But they all were until they brought on the subs, so it's difficult.
Alcaraz, obviously.
Smallbone is a weird one.
Off to Juve.
Dream move.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, what do you make of that?
I'm sad. However, I can see why Saints have done it. He's not getting tons of game time at the moment.
No.
When he plays, he has moments, but he doesn't play well all the time, and he doesn't totally suit Russell Martin's system. Although, you know, he has made some quite important contributions, I think, in games. You know, he has been involved a bit. I think he's only scored the same number of goals as Harwood Bellis, but... He does bring in something that like championship players can't really handle. But I guess last season, Saints were such a shambles that having a talented player that can carry the ball from midfield to attack and shoot and score was just like, oh my God, he was just a breath of fresh air, wasn't he, last half of last season. Whereas actually, you know, probably Russell Martin would be much happier with, you know, Rothwell, Downs, Smallbone, and, you know, a Stuart Armstrong or a Samuel Adozie or a Sulemana perhaps when he's fit again, or a Brooks.
I think Russell Martin is almost like relentlessly playing the numbers kind of manager, isn't he? Like, it's I think one of the interesting things that there's loads of interesting things, like, right? They don't really shoot from distance.
No.
Because the XG on that is low. And we've become a bit like Man City, which is the number of goals we score from in and around the six-yard box, where we take teams apart and we get that killer pass across. You know, like Man City do that just week in, week out, where they're just someone just taps it in from the six-yard line. And I just think Alquest is too much of a maverick. He's too... You know, he doesn't fit in that system, does he? Because you don't quite know what he's going to do. And when he does try and do things, they don't always come off. Like a Tadic player, you know, they don't always come
Tadic
off. But
when they do, Redmond, they
look amazing. Yeah, and I think Russell Martin has looked at it and he's like, you've got 46 games in this league this year. You need people who are going to grind and you need people who are going to do exactly what they're being told to do. Because I think it's a bit like Hasenhüttl, wasn't it? When everyone pressed, it works. And I think with Saints, you need everyone doing exactly what they're meant to be doing from Bazunu on up. And I think Alcaraz, he might have a really high talent ceiling, but I think Saints, with getting Brooks in, I think if we hadn't got Brooks in, I think it would have been a real high risk. But I do think that, you know, we've got Adams and you've got Armstrong, we've got probably two of the best forwards in the league. And then around them, you've got like now of just loads of really talented players in the Dozy, Solomona, Brooks, Fraser.
Yeah.
So I just don't know what Alcaraz does.
What about a word on Sam Amayor?
I mean, the guy looks must age 17 years old. So
is he only he does look like there. A kid. Is he only 17?
He does look.
I mean, he was 17. Great against Watford, wasn't he? You know, when they brought him on with the A team, he looked like he fit in the A team, didn't he?
Yeah, I mean, he looked good against Plymouth, and I think when he played early in the season, I think one of the things, you know, we are always going to play with two wingers, aren't we? Now, one of those is always likely to be Adam Armstrong, but there's always a place. You know, Fraser has got it now. He's done it. I mean, we should talk about Fraser, but like Adozie, you know, there's a place there.
Yeah.
We've been playing a lot of games this season.
Yeah.
Shame about Alcaraz, but I think it's the right thing.
Yeah. Do you think Brooks is our sort of like Billy Sharp signing?
I saw Billy Sharp only played, 18 games for Saints. Did you know that?
Yeah, I mean, he did one half a season, didn't he? That's it. And he scored 10
goals.
And
then that was it. I've always liked David Brooks. I think David Brooks is the sort of player that it feels like Saints should have signed before now.
Mm.
You know, like, I think at this level, it's clear Bournemouth didn't want him to go. I think at this level, I mean, we saw what he did again. I don't know if you watched the Bournemouth-Swansea in the cup, but like, he annihilated Swansea. You know, he took him to pieces. I think it's a really smart signing.
Yeah.
I think it's a really shrewd signing. I think it's another signing that sends a message of like, here's another Premier League player coming into Southampton, another Premier League quality player. He's played 13 times in Premier League this year. He only had two starts, but like, he's a really talented footballer. And he's a bit like Stuart Armstrong in that he can do something a bit special. He can do something a bit different. He can be clever. Yeah. And I think it's a really smart signing.
Yeah, I can see sort of like, if you are Brooks, if you are Ryan Fraser, if you're Taylor Harwood-Bellis, you're probably looking at Saints thinking, that's a really good team to get loaned to. If they're going to go up, there's a really good chance that they'll offer me a chance to stay in the Premier League. I'm a bit confused as to why Burnley didn't take Harwood-Bellis into the Premier League with them.
Yeah.
I watch Harwood-Bellis and I just can't imagine anyone passing him up.
No. And I mean, Burnley are getting pretty regularly tonked, aren't they? I mean, the score, what are they getting? They were losing pretty heavily to Man City, actually. It's only 3-1 in the end. But yeah, they're not tearing up much in the Premier League. So you do wonder. But also, you wonder whether Harwood-Bellis thinks he can do more. You know, he's only, what, like 21 or something. I mean, maybe it's better to be in the Championship doing well than it is to be in the Premier League getting massacred every week. I'm not sure. I know everyone talks about the Premier League like it is everything, but, you know, maybe there is something to be said for working with an exciting, progressive young manager like Russell Martin and trying to win something.
I think in Russell Martin, we now have possibly the first Southampton manager younger than me. This is more my coming to terms with my middle age, probably.
What is he, like 37 or so, 38? It's horrible, isn't it, like that?
38 years old.
Yeah.
I turned 40 this year, Tom.
Oh, well. Wait, I'm 42.
Oh, that's the answer to the life, universe, and everything. You know, that's the...
I'm wizened.
That's the pinnacle, I think, 42.
So who else has been good this season, John? Who else has been... I mean, like, obviously, so we spoke about Stuart Armstrong, we spoke about Flynn Downs, we're not sure about Smallbone, but at the end of the day, we do room with him in the team.
I mean, Adam Armstrong, player of the season so far?
Yeah, difficult to look past it, isn't it?
Yeah.
Also, like, the resurrection. The guy looked like he can... I remember last season, I was at Palace in the FA Cup when Nathan... It was one of the only Nathan Jones wins. And I remember not being that far away from Adam Armstrong, and he tackled the Palace goalkeeper about 30 yards from the goal.
He had a clear run
at the goal, and I remember thinking, he's going to miss. Because that was like, and you know, it was always like disbelief when he managed to slot it in an open goal from like 7 yards with no one within about a mile of him. But like, the resurrection, the redemption of Adam Armstrong, I mean, is there anything, you know, yeah, you play your trade in the Premier League, but maybe there's a really good living to be had as a completely lethal Championship striker.
Do you think
he does so much?
So you're saying if Saints get promoted, he should look to join Burnley or whoever gets relegated and just spend your entire life at the top of the Championship?
Yeah, but he's earned his chance. I mean, the thing is, if Saints do get promoted, a large part of it will be due to Adam Armstrong. So he's earned his chance. And you wonder if, you know, with the monkey off his back of scoring goals in a Saints shirt, if he would be better in the Premier League. I mean, it can't do him any harm, can it?
No. Chedham's been an interesting one this season, hasn't he? I was sort of, you know when he scored that goal against Plymouth really early doors, on in the season? And we were in the transfer window and there was talk of him perhaps leaving for Everton, I think. And I just remember watching him against that Plymouth game just saying, nah, we need to keep this guy in the Championship. He'll be the difference between us. Winning loads of games and not winning games.
Norwich, he looked the same as well. Norwich, he looked like, you know, he's going to boss this league and, you know.
It's a shame because I've always really liked Shea Adams, but a lot of this season has not been... Like, he's probably been one of the least likable players on the pitch because he just hasn't really been doing... You know, when you compare... When you sort of compare the performances of Adam Armstrong, Stuart Armstrong, Carl Walker-Peters, you know, they're all good players that all could have, you know, potentially played for someone else. And they've just got on with it and been brilliant. And he's sort of taken some of that, like, bad vibes, I think, from that final Saints season into this season. He's doing all right. And, you know, I'll be pleased if we get through the next sort of couple of hours without him leaving in this window.
Yeah.
And, you know, I think he'll do a, you know, fairly decent job for us. But he's not been quite as good as I was expecting him to be this season.
Well, I'm just looking now. So he scored 8 goals in the Championship in 24 appearances. Probably some of those are sub. He's weirdly enough, he's like one of the only players who doesn't seem to look any better at this level. He just still looks the same.
Yeah.
Although he has got a bit more lethal recently. I mean, I think we're playing him. I think the best role for Shea Adams is not as the tip of the spear. I just think the best role Shea Adams played, certainly for Saints, was behind Danny Ings. And I think if you look at you know, that goal, for example, the Armstrong, which was it recently? So Shea Adams comes back, past halfway line, passes it to Stuart Armstrong, who then runs and passes it for Adam Armstrong to score. It was 3-1. Was that Swansea? It feels like a lifetime ago.
Yeah.
But that thing there that Shea Adams does, where he goes away from the goal and he uses his strength, because he's a great passer. How many times did we see him like slot intricate balls through to Danny Ings for Danny Ings to score? And I think that's where he's at his best. I mean, like, we talk about Alcaraz. The Alcaraz goal from last season, you know, the one against Leicester, that's Shea Adams again at his best. And I think almost like we place too much faith on Shea Adams as a kind of a lethal goal scorer when he's definitely not that. What he probably is quite like an old fashioned number 10.
Yeah.
You know, like an old fashioned, like playing alongside a much more deadly striker, doing all the ugly work for that striker to thrive. And I think he's not the tip of the spear. I think he's probably getting away with it because we're in the Championship. But, you know, we go to Premier League, we just have the same problem again. But then also the problem with the Premier League was that Adam Armstrong wasn't the tip of the spear striker either. So they both weren't the right people. They're both the wrong tools for the job.
Yeah.
But yeah, so he's had a weird season, Adams.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, I still like him, I think. I think he's useful. And looking forward to him getting a few more extra goals to get us up the table. I suppose, really, Tom, that's got to be the key question, hasn't it, for this podcast? Is like, so season so far, three parts, sort of bit of a weird start, awful run, followed by just Saints supporting bliss. I mean, not that it's all been bliss. There have been some fairly chonky draws in there and some dodgy performances. But yeah, you just can't complain with 22 unbeaten. Despite being unbeaten for 22 games, we're still not in the automatic promotion places. We sit just behind Ipswich. Leeds are obviously going to overtake us, aren't they? Just by the fact they're going to play another game before we get the chance to play Rotherham. So it's sort of mad to think that we could be on a 22 game undefeated run and be as low as fourth in the table. Are those two automatic promotion spots, are they between those four? Or is it actually, it's just Ipswich, Southampton and Leeds fighting for second? Leicester have pretty much won the league. And then whoever out of those three doesn't get through, then they've got the lottery of the playoffs. It feels like those four teams are at a different level to the rest of the division.
Yeah, and the table doesn't lie. I mean, I'm looking at it now. I mean, Leeds are 12 points ahead of West Brom. Coventry, I think, incredible. But like, Saints are, you know, 14 points clear of not being in the playoffs. It feels like Saints, Ipswich. I mean, Ipswich are having a real wobble at the moment. It feels like Saints, Leicester, Leeds. I think it's between those three. I don't think it's a done deal for Leicester. I really don't, because I think Saints, at least 22 unbeaten. It's, you know, we're destroying teams. And yeah, but we need to cut. We're still quite far behind Leicester, but we've carved that gap. And there's still, what, like 19 games of the season to play, 18 games of the season to play. You know, our next two games are against the bottom team in the league and the fourth bottom team in the league, who have just lost their manager. So we've got, you know, again, we've got to take 6 points from that. I don't think it's a done thing. I think we'll catch Ipswich because I think we've got the squad. I think the horrible thing is, does it all come down to the last game of the season away at Elland Road?
Yeah, you want to be more than 3 points ahead of Leeds at that point, don't you? or more than 3 points ahead.
That's the horror. I think we can catch Leicester. I don't think it's a. I just think I've watched Leicester a few times recently. They don't look that good. they're winning games, but I guess that's why they're top of the league, because they're not playing well, but they're winning league. But they Saints look like a better footballing team than Leicester. And I think we can catch Leicester. I think it's going to be true. I think it's, but I'm probably optimistic. I think that you're right. It's probably one automatic place. I think it'll be Saints.
So the Tom Parker heart prediction is champions. The Tom Parker head prediction is second.
I think if they can catch Leicester, then they've done. Then Russell Martin deserves to applaud it. I think if we get promoted, Russell Martin deserves to applaud it. So I think Russell Martin has been, he's been great for the club, hasn't he? He just feels like he gets it, and he feels like he's found his place, and I think he comes across as just an incredibly strikingly, like, emotionally intelligent, good human being who's been through some really traumatic things in his life and has used them to propel himself to be better and to do more and to bring the best out of others. I think he's a great manager, and I think it shows that football fans, we don't know anything about football, do we? Because after we lost those four games, people are like, oh, get rid of Martin, but like, oh yeah, stop passing the ball around. But he knows what he's doing. You know, we pass the ball around because sooner or later, like, it's too much for someone to take, and we score a goal.
Yeah,
and it works.
It's been a real test of patience, hasn't it? And I think had Sports Republic made some better decisions before the appointment of Russell Martin, maybe we'd have given him a bit more time. But I think it's sort of like, yeah, was getting rid of Hasenhüttl the right decision? Some people thought that should have happened earlier. Some people thought it should never have happened. Nathan Jones, oof. And then Ruben Sellers giving him the appointment to the end of the season just after a one game. Nathan Jones has left the building bounce. You know, there were, and also, I mean, the transfers last year were just awful last season. I think Saints fans have been stung, right? You know, there was a very low level of trust with the ownership and the people running the club that they're going to make the right decisions, but they absolutely have with Russell Martin.
Yeah, I completely agree. I think the way we play, I think one of the Swansea goals, again, you know, from a couple of weekends ago, was like 25 passes, you know, like almost every player in the team's touching the ball. But these aren't unusual for Saints anymore, are they? These types of goals where everyone is getting the ball. And it just is, I remember watching the game against Cardiff, when you just see players they spend so much of their energy chasing Southampton players who are chasing the ball and not getting near the ball. And you just imagine, like, by the 80th minute, they must be just mentally and physically exhausted.
Yeah.
You know, just chasing that ball around the pitch. And then, you know, again, like we spoke earlier about the impact of the substitutes, but players like Fraser, Dozy, that can come off the bench and completely change the game. I think it's great. I mean, I've got to say, it's probably the best football for a Saints fan to watch since we were top of the league under Hasenhüttl, but I'd argue it's probably even better than that, because it's Rolls Royce football.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know if you've watched the Pep Guardiola documentary that's on BBC iPlayer at the moment. But
is it good?
Yeah, it's worth a watch. And they're sort of like, you know, when he's sort of managing the Barcelona B team before he gets the job as the Barcelona manager. And that description of the way that he wants Barcelona to play, with it just, you know, constantly passing, always play out from the back. You know, his philosophy is that, you know, if we don't concede any goals, we can't lose. And if the opponent's going to score goals, then they need to have the ball. So if we have the ball for 80% of the game, then we're limiting their chance to score to, you know, a very, very, you know, few handful of minutes and a handful of chances. And you can see that with Russell Martin. And, you know, possibly what he had at MK Dons and Swansea didn't quite have the talent of the players to fully realise what he's now managed to do at Saints. you know, one thing I would do, if I was Russell Martin, it has struck me how much slower or more disorganized the pressing is in the Championship versus the Premier League. So when teams press us, we have been able at times, I think, to be a little bit casual with the way we knock it around the back, because the press in the Championship is not as robust as the press in the Premier League. You know, I absolutely think we should stick with Russell Martin. I agree with you. I think we probably will get promoted this season. I think probably in second. I hope for first, but I think we'll probably get automatic promotion second. And I think we'll do it by passing teams to death, wearing them out, and then picking them off with our higher level of talent. If and when we get to the Premier League, we need our players to be able to do that passing quicker. And I would, you know, I wonder if you can just sort of like slowly ratchet it up, you know, 1% quicker every game between now and the end of the season. And then by the time you reach the Premier League, you're doing what you're doing, but 20% faster. And I think that's going to be the level, the step up that Saints will need to make going into the Premier League next season. They'll need to be 20, 25% faster to be able to play through the press.
Yeah, I agree with you. And I think it was as well as the players we've got that look kind of outstanding, probably Carl Walker-Peters and Stuart Armstrong aside, none of them have ever really looked great in the Premier League. Like Downs didn't get many games for West Ham. You know, like Smallbone never really looked the part of Saints when he played in the Premier League. He didn't get loads of chances. But, you know, like Adam Armstrong always struggled. Shea Adams, you know, B-. It's difficult, isn't it? There's a lot of players there that are going to either have to play at a level they've never played at before, like Manning, or completely raise their game. But I think your point about keeping the ball is absolutely right, and about how football has changed, hasn't it, from like stopping the other team from scoring, and it's now about complete possession.
Yeah.
And I think one of the fascinating things with Saints is like you see other teams just cannot get the ball off them. You know, like good teams in the Championship, but they play like just cannot get near our players. I think the step up will be, if we get there, it will be astronomical, maybe a bridge too far. But I think with Martin, he's just given them that belief, hasn't he? And I think he's got a style.
Yeah.
And I think, you know, whether we go up or not, he deserves a huge amount of credit. I'm a big fan. I just think he's just transformative manager for Saints.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, it's really enjoyable to watch. I mean, also, it's not like we've completely lost the press as well. We still press high up the pitch and win the ball back.
Yeah.
I mean, not to the same extent as Ralph Hasenhüttl, but I feel like, you know, if you have like super fit players with great concentration, a bit more zip and speed, and you combine like a quick press with the possession, but quicker, then we could be okay in the Premier League. And I think you need to bring a couple of smarter players in. To help the team.
I think as well, this is why the FA Cup draw is a bit of a frustrating FA Cup draw, because I think, you know, if we can get past Watford at home, and you'd fancy our chances to do that, we then go to Liverpool away, so we don't really learn anything.
No. I mean, we know we're not going to be as good as Liverpool.
We go to the best. Yeah, but it would have been interesting to get a Burnley at home, or to get a a Luton, or to get an Everton. You know, like that would have been interesting. I don't think we're not going to learn anything by going to Liverpool unless we win. And let's face it, there's probably about a 4% chance of that. So, yeah.
I mean,
but I think,
you know, let's face it. Look at this. Stranger things have happened. Man City's historic quadruple was stopped by Nathan Jones managing one of the worst Southampton teams of recent history.
It was like Nathan Jones and Moussa Djiapo, the sort of weirdest, Butch Cassidy and the Sundance Kid of Premier League football. Oh, and Sakumara, who looks like, even still now, you're amazed when he scores from like 2 yards out. I don't know. What a weird thing it is. But I guess the thing is, they would go, wouldn't they, to Liverpool and they would put out a proper first team, unlike against Watford. And I guess they would have a free pass, because either they win and everyone goes, that's amazing, or they lose and everyone goes, well, of course they lost, it's Liverpool, top of the Premier League.
Yeah.
But if we can ruin Pep's quadruple, then maybe we can ruin Jurgen's.
Yeah. Yeah, we've got to give it a go, right? I mean, we say all this, we'll bloody 100%. Lose to Watford in the replay on Tuesday.
Yeah, we'll lose Tuesday. To Watford 3-1. But other players, look, just, you know, Ryan Fraser. Again, Russell Martin. Everyone's like, oh, what are we doing bringing in Ryan Fraser? He's a pain in the ass. He's a bad egg. Russell Martin knows best. Play to the guy. Ryan Fraser comes in. Amazing. One of the players of the season.
He just doesn't seem like a bad egg at all, either.
He's shorter than me as well, which is very rare in any sort of man.
That's astonishing.
Astonishing. Because they were called him the wee man at Millwall. And I was like, how small can he be? I was like, oh my God, he's 5'4".
Is he?
Tiny. Yeah,
no professional football players are 5'4".
It's like Maradona height.
Even Carl Walker-Peters, who looks tiny on a football pitch, he's 5'8". He's the same height as me.
I don't think he's 5'8", is he?
Carl Walker-Peters, according to his Wikipedia page, is 173 centimetres, which is... I signed up to some weird medical research and I had to measure my height. So I know that. As of 2 days ago, I was 5'8", 173 centimetres, which is what Carl Leonardus Walker-Peters is listed as on his Wikipedia page. And he looks tiny on a football pitch.
Ryan Fraser. He does. Ryan Fraser is 5'4".
Yeah.
It's unbelievable. It's got to be the smallest professional footballer in the country. If there's anyone smaller, let us know.
Yeah. The email address is saintsfcpodcast@gmail.com. I do still occasionally check it.
But he's been amazing. And also, like, the importance of the goals, you know, away at Millwall, away at Hull. You know, that's the difference, isn't it, in this run? That's how we've kept up close to Leicester, is those grinding out those results.
Yeah.
Fraser's been amazing.
I mean, we've done Russell Martin. We've done the players that have impressed us. We've done our predictions for the rest of the season, which involves ruining Jurgen Klopp's final season and either winning the league or coming second. Cue Southampton implosion coming. We've done a little bit on our transfer window. I guess, you know, do you want to bring out any sort of like highlights, Tom, or is there anything, or is it just that general good feeling, that good run? Anything funny, anything weird, anything that we should be looking forward to with trepidation or excitement?
I just think the quality of football, I don't think it's going to get better and better and better. Like, I just think they just seem to be really well drilled. I think it's amazing the quality of coaching they're obviously getting. But if we're going to be, you know, in the interest of balance, my one grumble is corners.
Okay, yeah. Like, I did allow you in any other business agenda item, didn't I?
Yeah. Corners, right? Have you've seen that footage of Luke Edwards when he was the Notts County manager, when someone's like, you never play the ball in the box on corners. You should play the ball in the box more, like a fans forum. And he's like, I'm going to tell you, we create more chances from corners. You know, and Saints get more corners. I think Saints have an average of like 10 corners a game. They're by far the most corners of any team in the Championship, I guess, because we play the ball down the wing so much. But our corners, we just, you know, it's a bit like the James Ward-Prowse again, just lumping the ball in the box, Manning and Stuart Armstrong. And I think one of the fascinating things, if you've not seen the Luke Edwards clip at the Notts County fan forum where someone asked him about corners, I'd really recommend people go watch it, because he basically said that they have more possession. You could tell he was Russell Martin's number two at Swansea, because basically what he says is they have more possession of the ball and they create more chances from corners. Because he says, what you think is, if we cross the ball in, you know, if we play a short corner and we play around and then 20 seconds later, 30 seconds later, we create a chance. You think that's not from the corner, but that's the way we measure it, is if we've kept the ball from a corner, then anything that happens is still from a corner.
Yeah.
And I think with Saints, we're so good at playing the ball around, but we're actually not very good, apart from Harvard Bellis, at scoring headers. And I think we need to mix it up and play more short corners, if you're listening, Russell.
Wow. I mean, that's interesting there as well, isn't it? That you think it's like Russell Martin's right-hand man. He's saying that about corners. So do you think Russell Martin, like, all that time was just like, oh, I'm going to let him do the short corners. Now he's on his own. He's just like, great. This is what I've been wanting to do. Win 10 corners a game and lump it in the box. But it's, you know, it's not working.
Well, and I think, Luke Evans puts it much more eloquently than I ever can. But he's like, of course, you remember those goals where a cross goes in the box and a centre-back comes out of nowhere and leathers it with his head and it goes back out. But he says, you remember them because they're so rare.
Yeah.
It doesn't...
That's, Ricky Lambert teams don't for England goals against Scotland.
Corners. Yeah. You remember it because it's so rare. But what, and I think what Saints are missing a trick at is, it's like, get the ball, win a corner. Yeah, we might want to mix up, but... Give the ball to Adosi. Give the ball to Fraser. You know, like, because what Luke Edwards says is, like, defenders like corners because they know the odds on scoring, the chances of conceding a goal are actually pretty slim. Mm. And it gives them time to rest and mentally rejuvenate and physically get their energy levels back. And what Luke Edwards says is, no, you play short corners, they're like, oh my God, I've got to go again. I've got to keep running. And I think Saints, I think, missing a trick. More short corners. Just keep the pressure on. Pressure. Like the Zuton said.
You know what, Tom? This section on corners has really hurt me because I'm now drawn back to that fateful night at Wembley in 2021 at the 2020 Euros. And England were defending one corner away from being European champions. That was it. That Italy goal came from a lump it in the box corner.
Yeah. But that was because they kind of had to, I guess. But Saints had 10 corners a game, 11 corners a game. You know, we're in luxury.
Yeah.
We're better than Italy were in that tournament, John. You know that.
I mean, is that the matchup you want to see? Euro 2021 Italy versus Russell Martin's Saints.
Look,
You fancy
I just think, I think that's it. I fancy it.
Well, so in which case, then why the hell do we not fancy Klopp's Liverpool at Anfield?
I think they will.
Do you think they'd underestimate us?
I guess it depends, isn't it? They're now top of the league, but I guess they will now want to win everything when they hit him. So there's no chance in hell they're putting out like a weakened team. And they're going to feel it's like Liverpool fans, you know, they're freaking... They feel like destiny, don't they, Liverpool fans? They feel it's like they're, it has to happen to them.
Yeah.
It would be quite funny if they win.
There's a sort of a religious fervour, isn't there, to the whole Liverpool thing?
Yeah.
Oh, here we go.
For a lot of reasons.
Here's another interesting thing that's happened between the last, you know, since episode 117 and this episode, Tom, is Saints have announced that they're going to, well, they're consulting now, aren't they, on bringing safe standing to St Mary's and having a sort of a northern cop end.
Yeah, interesting one, because isn't part, but then this is a weird, isn't it? This is like a law of unintended consequences, because I think the atmosphere in the north is so good because of the away fans.
Yeah.
So it's almost like what came first, the chicken or the egg? Is the atmosphere, would the atmosphere be better if everyone could stand, or will the atmosphere will burst because everyone can stand and there are no away fans?
Yeah.
So, do you know what I mean? It's like, I always like to be in the north because of the away fans. And I think you lose that. But then also, I remember, do you remember when you and I went to Wolves away a few years back?
Mm.
And Danny Ings scored, I think it was 1-1. And if you've not been to the Wolves away, one of the things you realise is that, like, the Molyneux, they just give, like, the away fans the worst possible seats, like, low down on the side of the pitch. And I always think it's weird that Saints give the away fans an area behind the goal.
Yeah.
It's almost like such a Southampton, genteel, generous, middle-class thing to do. And then Wolves are like, no, you go about the side of the pitch, but at the bottom, where you can barely see anything.
Yeah, and then you're really spread out, so you can't generate an atmosphere either.
Yeah, well, like, you know, in Palace do the same. They stick you in, like, restricted view. Whereas, and they give their own fans the behind the goal.
Yeah, and that also, I mean, that is one of the beauties of the cup matches, isn't it? It's like the larger away allocation that you get in the FA Cup, which means that you end up with a whole end. You get the whole end of Craven Cottage or the whole end of Watford or Vicarage Road or Anfield or wherever it is. And that just generates an incredible atmosphere. So I can see from the point of they want to have a large section of safe standing together. I don't think they could bring it into the chapel because I think the typical discerning chapel fan is not someone that wants to stand up. Whereas the Northern stands up.
People sit in the chapel for a reason.
Yeah, I mean, the Northern stands up the whole way through the game anyway, doesn't it? I think at the moment, you know what I think the fatal flaw to this is that they're proposing to move the away fans to the current family section. I think if they wanted to make the atmosphere at St Mary's with the safe standing really work and have that sort of like red wall at the northern end, so you make that safe standing, instead of moving the away fans to the family section, move them to the corner between the northern and the Kingsland.
Yeah. Because then you get the best of both worlds.
Yeah, yeah. So you get the whole northern for Saints fans, but they still want to stay there because they got the banter with the away fans. If you move them to the current family stand, what's going to happen? Some people from the Northern and the Itchen North will want to go and be next to the away fans for the atmosphere. Some people will want to try out the new safe standing. It'll take quite a while to settle down, whereas I think if they just moved the away fans round to the other side of the Northern, put them in that corner, gave them a little bit of the Kingsland North, and then had your sort of your red wall at the end of the whole Northern, I think that would be the solution for me.
Yeah, and I think, I just think it's weird the way we've done it for years, giving away fans a prominent part of standing behind the goal. Because I think, like, let's face it, right? Modern football, as expensive and as pain in the arse as it is, when was the last time, you know, a Premier League team, for example, didn't sell out their away allocation? Everyone sells out their away allocation. It's not like fans aren't, like, it's not like, you know, we get back to the Premier League, it's not like Spurs fans aren't going to come to St Mary's because they're like, oh, we don't get great seats at St Mary's, they're just going to go.
Yeah.
Of course they are. So, like, why are we helping other teams out?
Yeah.
It's just a weird thing that, you know, because we're just nice people. Yeah. But it's not being nice, you know, be winners.
I've got one more any other business before I think we should wrap it up. VAR. How much better?
I'm happy it's not there.
How much better is football without VAR? You know what? I think if you go back to past episodes of this podcast, you will hear me going, oh yeah, really excited about VAR. I think it's a really good idea. It's going to work in Saints' favour. You know what? I was completely wrong. I apologise to all of our listeners for ever championing VAR. Because football without VAR is just so much better. And that will be a really sad thing about going about the Premier League is that bloody VAR. It's rubbish.
I completely agree. And I think as well, for Saints as well, who play such a tight style of football, you know, with so many intricate through balls and passes out to wingers and fullbacks that are really holding, you know, that are pushing as far up the pitch as they can. I think the lack of VAR really helps us. And also, if you think, like, was it against Preston earlier this season when, like, Benderek rugby tackled that guy and we'd have been 2-0 down if they scored the penalty. And then you look at the Plymouth game with St Mary's recently, where they had that goal disallowed from a header, which never been disallowed and would never have been disallowed in the Premier League. And I think we've got lucky, but it's, you know, it's a much better spectacle for a fan, isn't it? Without VAR, because it happens, and it, you know, and it's just, all that VAR has ended in is people talking about VAR exactly like we're doing now. It's just displaced the drama.
Yeah.
And I just don't miss it. And this is part of my point. I'd be very happy to not go up to Premier League, to be honest, because I just don't. I think it becomes so little about the football, particularly when you're a smaller club like Saints, because they don't. You're just collateral damage in the soap opera of the big six clubs or whatever it is.
Yeah,
you know, you're just a thing that happens, and VAR is just part of that. And I think it's just nice to just be able to focus on winning games and playing really good football and scoring goals and everyone looking happy.
And celebrating when you score, right?
Yeah, and not knowing that, like, they're going to go back at Stockley Park and they're going to be like, oh, hang on a minute.
Yeah.
28 minutes ago. You know, like, it's just, VAR is just a disaster.
Yeah. Right. We've according to my recorder, we've been recording for 1 hour and 6 minutes.
You know, that's good.
Despite the fact I think we're a bit rusty, I think we've got through this okay, Tom.
Yeah, I think so. We could do this again, John.
Yeah, yeah. Any sort of like final music or book recommendations or culinary delights?
Yeah, you know, I listened to the Garbage album, Garbage, from like 1997 earlier today, and it still slaps, is what I would say to people.
So I have a car which has a CD player, which is great because I just like very regularly just dip into my old CDs and chuck them on. But yeah.
Anything you've been listening to?
I was listening to The Eels, Daisies of the Galaxy.
The live album, is that?
No, it's not a live album.
No.
It's the one with Mysteries, Beautiful Blues, and yeah. It's just a great,
the other thing,
great album. But yeah, I went and watched them, I think, live in the venue formerly known as the Colston Hall in Bristol. I don't know what it's called now, if it's still called the Colston Hall or not. But yeah, and that was probably back in the late 90s, I reckon.
We're getting old now, John.
Yeah. There we go. So there's our new music recommendations, two albums from the 1990s.
Yeah. Two albums that are at least 25 years old.
Yeah. All right. Well, if you've listened, let us know what you think. Saints FC Podcast, at Saints FC Podcast on Twitter, or X as it's now called, and Saints FC Podcast @gmail.com. Or, send us a voice recording on a CD and I'll play it in my car on the way to dropping the kids off at nursery and school. Right. Thank you very much, all. I've got to remember how to do the exit music. I think it's this button. Here we go. Oh, yeah, there we go. Good night, all.